We are in Mishlei, Parak Chaf Zayin, Pasuk Vav 27:6. Thank you to the Tagers for sponsoring tonight's class. Le'ilui Nishmas Janelle's father, Shmuel Dov Ben Yehuda Zev Halevi. Yirtzeh Hashem, his neshama should have an aliyah. We are in the middle of some wonderful pieces of chachma, of wisdom, from Shlomo HaMelech. Last we left a couple weeks ago, we had said this pasuk that I had said it in a specific way, which was geared more towards how the Ralbag explains, if I remember seeing it in a footnote. There's another way to understand it, so let's just go over that just quickly. So it's actually connected to something we'll say later tonight, in a little bit. The pasuk said in pasuk Hey 27:5, Tovach tochachas megula me'ahava misuteres. The way that we translated it last time was better is the clear and explicit rebuke than the concealed love. Because if love is concealed, it might be good in the sense that, you know, you're getting along, but it's not good in the sense that it does anybody any good if the person doesn't know that you love them. Right, we talked about that. On the other hand, if you have explicit criticism, at least that, when it's coming from a good place, is beneficial for the person. The other explanation is just basically that interpretation. Tova tochachas megula me'ava misuteres, that if rebuke comes from an inner love, so then it's a good thing. We basically understood it that way. At least we understood the first clause like that just by itself. But either way, we can move on to Pasuk Vav 27:6. Ne'emanim pitzei ohev v'na'ataros neshikos sone. So this is similar to that pasuk. Ne'emanim is an interesting word, though. Ne'emanim, what does the word ne'eman mean?
Believers.
Believed, believable, faithful, I would say in this context, trustworthy. Ne'emanim pitzei ohev. What's pitzei? It sounds like a weird use of the term.
I know, it sounds like pizza. I don't know.
Pitzua. Anyone know the word in Hebrew? Pitzua. A damage.
Is wounded.
A wound, a damage, an injury. Yeah. So here what it's saying is, ne'emanim pitz'ei ohev. If someone that loves you, injures you, damages you, in this case, gives you rebuke that really hurts, gives you some kind of criticism that really, it makes you feel bad. So, just like we say, you know, belief means when you don't know something or when you don't see something. In this case, you also don't see how the criticism is going to help. But nonetheless, we use the word here, Shlomo HaMelech uses the word ne'emanim. It is trustworthy. Trust me, you know. If a good friend tells you something, you're like, I don't think that's a good idea. Or if you did something wrong, and you're really looking, you know, you don't know if you did something well or not, and the friend goes, you did that poorly, and it was really bad. And you're like, really? It was that bad? And like, yeah, it's really bad. So if it was a person who maybe wasn't your friend, so then maybe you could shrug them off. But if it's a person that's a friend, so you have to believe them. Ne'emanim pitzei ohev. Because you know that they have your back, because you know that they love you and they're supportive of you, so if there is some kind of, you know, offensive criticism, it hurts. It's not easy to take criticism without personal offense. But if it's coming from someone that supports you, that loves you, that's clear, who clearly is, you know, criticizing you in order to help, not to hurt. So then even if it does hurt, so then you have to believe it. Ne'emanim pitzei ohev. It is trustworthy. You can trust your friend who is giving you this insult, this hurt. It's hurting you, but nonetheless, you should trust them. V'na'ataros neshikos sone. Na'ataros is an interesting word. Na'ataros, let me just see. Inan riboy. Vinataros, the Mitzvah Sion says it's a lashon of many. I'm not really sure. Nataros, how do you understand that in the context? I'm not sure. Yeah. Let me see the not really sure. Let me see if there's another explanation. How do they translate in the art scroll? Failure of the Lord is inflicted by a lover, but superfluous. Oh, nataros means like a lot, like too much, like unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting use of the word. There's a word, vayetar, which is the same shoresh. I wonder if anyone uses that. Vayetar is a word like an itur or an atar. An atar is a pitchfork that you use. And Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, Rashi says, vayetar Yitzchak la'ashem lenochach ishto. And Yitzchak is davening for a child. He ultimately gets Yaakov and Esav. But when he davens, it says the word vayetar, like up it. So Rashi says over there, vayetar means to sort of flip things upside down. So I don't know if there's a drasha to be made here. Netar means like to flip upside down. Either way, the opposite is true when it comes to the kisses of a enemy, someone who hates you. And superfluous are the kisses of a foe. That's how it says in the article. Sometimes you think that, that person, sending me a comment, sending me a compliment that maybe is, I should take it as a good thing. But other times, but in reality, we should realize that sometimes those people are only doing so in order to, make us feel, insincerely supported. Who knows what's behind it? At the very least, they are empty kisses. They're empty compliments. And we have to be careful. We have to be careful about being true and honest and making sure the compliments that we give are real compliments. I'm not really sure. Mitsudos David says, Afilo hanashikos merubos hema vehinam lemasa. I don't see that in the pasuk. Vehinam lemasa means they're going to be a burden. Hoil ve'ein bahem toelas. Now, it's not in the pasuk, but let me make a drasha based on that, which is that Mitzudas David is saying it's not just superfluous. It's not just superfluous means unnecessary. Okay, so big deal. We got a few extra things. What does it hurt? It doesn't hurt anybody. The truth is, it does hurt. It does hurt if you get a compliment from someone who doesn't mean it. So what's ultimately going to happen? You're going to think that whatever you did was actually good, and you're going to do it again. And in the meantime, there's actually stuff about what you did that you could improve on. And because your enemy, and I would even go as far as to say, the one who gives you an empty comment, an empty compliment, someone is insincerely telling you you did a good job when you really didn't, so that makes them into a foe. You are not helping me by complimenting me when I didn't do something right. And this is very much relevant to the world we live in. It just seems like the world is obsessed with making people feel good. And that's obviously that's a good thing in many contexts, to make people feel good. But if the making the people feel good is enabling their, if it's enabling their laziness or their misdeeds or their delusions, I always get a kick out of this message. Why do we give? And this might sound harsh to you, because we've been so programmed with it. But why do people always say, follow your dreams? What does that mean, follow your dreams? That sounds like a good thing to do. Follow your dreams. Okay. So what does follow your dreams mean? If you have someone who is, just had dreams of being a football player, dreams of being a big shot stockbroker, that's not cut out for everybody. Not everyone has the skill set to do those things. Now, maybe you do, and if you do, so then you go for it. Take your shot, whatever.
Yeah, so go for it. If it doesn't work out, plan B.
Right. My point is, you have to know when to fold them. If you're, a 5'6", scrawny Jewish kid, so then maybe football's not your thing. That doesn't mean you're a failure. Yeah, that just means you had this crazy dream once upon a time when you were a kid, and I had to give up on it.
Giving advice that like the person we're here, it's about somebody who hates you.
So I'm making a bit of a drush on it. But Vinat Taros Neshiko Sone, the Mitzudas David explains, when just explaining to himself, not the Pasuk necessarily, how Mitzudas David sounds like. He says that the kisses, or I'm saying the compliments, of an enemy are actually burdensome. Mm-hmm. They actually hurt you.
Yeah.
Even though they're being nice to you. So if you tell, you know, a 5'6" scrawny little kid, yeah, you should go out for the, you know, go play football. So you're going to get him hurt. He's going to waste his life. And that's not a good thing to compliment somebody, you know, to give him support when he's doing the wrong thing. Now, we live in a world that's obsessed with doing that. You know, yeah, you can, and we don't have to go into political stuff in terms of, you know, gender ideology and stuff, but you can understand what I'm talking about in terms of manipulating people to make really bad decisions, you know, hurting themselves in ways that are, yeah, that are irreversible.
In a different way, to me, like the mafia person who compliments you and says a lot of nice things about you.
Ingratiates you to manipulate you.
In the back.
Okay, that could be also. This could be the prank. It could be the prank caller. This could be the guy who comes to your door with some kind of scam. You know, makes you buy a bunch of magazines, something like that.
He's being nice, but he's not. Being
right. He's just some customer service rep that learned how to say compliments. Yeah, that could be also. That could be also for sure. Okay, a very interesting pasuk after this in pasuk Zion, Chav Zion Zion 27:7. Nefesh svea tavus nofes. Nefesh svea. Svea means to be satiated, satisfied. You feel full.
So, yeah.
Nefesh svea tavus nofes. What's nofes? Nofet sufim. It usually means, here they translate it as a honeycomb. What does it mean? Someone who is satiated will trample on a honeycomb. If you're full,
nofes is a honeycomb?
Yeah, at least according to the Arts Girl. If you feel full, you feel satiated, you don't need to eat anymore, even the sweetest of things, you know, oh, I can't eat anymore. You know, I can't eat that. But what is that? This is your favorite dessert? Yeah, but I'm stuffed. I just can't eat it. There is a Gemara that says there's always room for dessert. That's a Gemara in Megillah, but we don't have to talk about that one. It's probably true for me, but the point is that if a person is full, if they're feeling full, they don't need to eat anymore, even if it's that's the best tasting thing ever. Okay, well, we'll have to explain this. But v'nefesh re'eva, and the hungry soul, kol mar matok, even the most bitter thing is sweet. Now, this is a weird phenomenon, but what I'm about to say is a little weird. Sometimes I feel this when I eat maror on Pesach. You know, there's a certain, especially the first night, and you're starving, and all you've had is two cups of wine and some dry matzah. You just want to eat something else. And you have, you know, at least for me, you have that lettuce. It's supposed to be bitter. And we harvest it before the bitter part sets in, so it's not so bitter. Even though that's what counts for maror, it just feels refreshing, you know. And I'm just starving, and I just want some tasty food. But the point is that generally, you know, and I don't know how many people feel this, you know, if you know because of my schedule, sometimes the time that I go to the supermarket, the time that I run errands, you know, to shop for the house is after I do like my morning hours here in the office. Mm-hmm. But before I go home for lunch, like while I'm out, I'll go shop. Right. It's the worst time to shop. Because even the stuff that I don't like eating, I'm still looking like, should I buy that? I'm like, no, I don't like that. But I'm starving. But the reason why I want it is because I would eat anything right now. Yeah. You know? So sometimes this happens with Ricky, you know, earlier on in our marriage, she would make different dishes and she would say like, hey, what do you think about this on like a Friday night meal?
Yeah.
I'm like, honestly, I'm starving. I can't tell you if it's good or not. I like it now. It's good now because I haven't eaten all day. Fridays are one of those days, you know, you just don't eat the whole day. But
yeah, so don't go shopping.
Exactly. Don't go. Exactly. Anything looks good, you know, even if it's the most bitter thing, it looks like a tasty thing. That's true too. I have a couple of things here and there, but yeah. So this is according to the Pshat. Pshat seems pretty clear. The Pshat is that if you are not hungry, you're not even going to be hungry for something very sweet. And if you are hungry, you're going to think even the most bitter thing is sweet. Rashi, however, says that this is, and others also say, this is actually counterintuitive. That really what we're looking for is not in the pasuk, what Shlomo Melech is criticizing deriding a person for is if they aren't hungry. There was a, I don't know if I've said this before, there was a Rebbe in Keren Biavne, in KBY, named Rav Blachman, and he was once learning with Rav Yitzhak Kuttner, and Rav Yitzhak Kuttner said to him, you should never teach your students until their tongues are white. Never teach your students until their tongues are white. Anyone ever look at their tongues on a fast day?
Yeah.
Right? They're all dehydrated, and it's white because it just hasn't eaten any food. It hasn't been replenished. So the point that he was making to him was, if you want your students to be successful, they have to want it. They have to be hungry for it. If somebody's not hungry for something, if they have no curiosity,
yeah,
so then they're not, they're even the sweetest, and this I feel like a lot, you know, with, you know, in the shul, but also, you know, historically, in my life, historically, you know, in my life, you know, when I was an NCSY or an advisor or some kind of, you know, teaching teenagers, you know, it's very rare that you find a teenager that genuinely is curious. But we do the best we can to make the sweetest piece of Torah, the sweetest education, the sweetest, you know, experiential and whatever it is. We do our best. But if the kid's not interested, mm-hmm, it doesn't matter how sweet you make the Torah. They feel satiated. They don't feel like they need anything. I've talked about this Pesach time, the importance of asking questions at the Seder, and the importance of curiosity, and how the world we live in has less and less curiosity every day, not because they can't figure things out, but because it's too easy to figure everything out. Everyone feels like they don't need to know anything because you can always ask Siri, or you can ask Google, or you can ask Bixby, or whatever the one for Galaxy is, ChatGPT, whatever it is. We have that, you know, understanding like, oh, if I ever need something, so like it's right there. But the truth is that has killed our curiosity. And why is curiosity important? Curiosity is not just important in order to motivate us to know things. Curiosity is important in order for us to feel satisfied. If we don't feel curious, we won't be satisfied by the answer.
And society won't progress.
And we won't be looking for more things, trying to develop more things. That could be for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing like when you don't know something and you ask Google. It doesn't feel so satisfying. But let's say you had a question, and in order to figure out the answer to that question, you had to go down the street to the library. You had to ask the librarian, where's the section on whatever, lobsters. And you have to go to the fiction, the nonfiction section. You go to the sea creature section, and you find the book, and you're looking through, you're shuffling through the pages, finally trying to figure out this thing about lobsters. Finally, you find the information. That's satisfying. That satisfies you, right? So too here. Nefesh Svea Tavos Nofes, says Rashi, if a person feels satiated religiously and therefore they don't want to learn Torah, even the sweetest kind of Torah is not going to do anything for them. Even the sweetest piece of Torah, the sweetest of our Torah, the most wonderful drasha, it's not going to mean anything to them. It's not going to be satiating. I think that's Rashi says. Let me just see it here. Hamaras Hatma Kasavea, She'enu Misavla Divrei Torah, L'Tavas Nafesh, Tavus Nafesh, Af HaTa'amim, HaMiyushavim Al Halev, Enam Chashuvim Alav, even that which works with you. Rashi is saying, going a little further, a person has something that's bothering them, but they feel like they don't need to know it. They don't need to know the answer. Even if they got a good answer, it's not going to be satiating. It's not going to feel good to them. So, that's what Rashi is saying here. However, those who are nefesh re'eva, someone who is hungry, someone who's curious, someone who really has a thirst for knowledge. So that person, even if it's not the best answer, even if it's not the best of our Torah, it feels sweet. Oh, that! Thank you for that piece of Torah. Thank you for that information. You know, you feel a sense of gratitude and a sense of satiation, even from a partial answer, because you're a curious person. You want to know things. I said over this story, I don't know why this sticks in my brain, but the story when I was in yeshiva, and yeshiva is a time where you sort of develop that curiosity, that thirst for learning, that thirst for studying, to fill in gaps that you don't know. And I was sitting on an Eged bus. I remember the story. I was sitting on an Eged bus, and it was the strangest feeling, and I remember it till today. I was sitting on the seat, and I just said to myself, Eged. I wonder who founded the Eged bus company. I'm like, what? Why did I just ask that? Like, who cares? Like, until now, I didn't realize, until that moment, I didn't realize how my thirst for learning had sort of trained me, had cultivated this just curiosity in myself, that I just wanted to know things. And I was sitting on an Eged bus, and you know, any year previous to that, I wouldn't care. Just on a bus. That's what buses are. Buses. And for whatever reason, I just that question popped into my mind, and I just had this moment of reflection. Like, why do I care? Like, why? Since when do I care who founded a bus company? And then when I got to a computer, because at that time, believe it or not, my cell phone didn't have Google on it. When I was, believe it or not, I'm not that young. But I got back to my dorm room and I looked it up on a computer. I looked up the history of the Eged Bus Company. That's how curious. It's just like the weirdest thing. You figured it out. I don't really care anymore. But it's just sometimes you know. There's a certain curiosity that you develop that's really like a very nice quality. Like, I'm just, you becoming curious.
And you would just get your answers satisfied that much quicker now.
So that's true. The question is whether or not that curiosity is really like a hunger.
Yeah.
Right? That's my point. My point is that the Pasuk is talking about the real sweetness comes from when you're hungry, not from when you can get an answer. If you can get an answer so quickly, so you're not really that hungry. Right? You can look it up so quickly, it's not that satisfying. It's not sweet to find what Google says. Right? For sure it's helpful. But you don't feel that sweetness. You don't feel satiated by getting a Google answer. I remember there was a study done. What's his name? I forgot his first name. Gilbert. Something Gilbert. Daniel Gilbert? Maybe. Might be Dan Gilbert. Although that's also the name of a basketball owner. So.
That's a guy from Detroit.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Could be. I don't know. Either way, it's similar. It's Ron Gilbert, maybe. Either way, he has a book called, Stumbling on Happiness. That's what it's called, Stumbling on Happiness, where he has a study in there about, you know, people that they offered. I've probably said this before also. People they offered them, hey, do you want to take a 10-question quiz or do you want a candy bar? Mm-hmm. They all took the candy bars.
Yeah.
And then they changed it and they said, here's a 10-question quiz. And they gave them 10 questions, a little challenging questions, things that people wanted to know. And then they said, do you want the answers or do you want the candy bar? And most people wanted the answers instead of the candy bar.
Yeah.
There's a certain satiation that you get when you're really curious about something.
Yeah.
And that's what I think of with this pasuk. That nefesh re'eva komar masok. That if you're really hungry, so then anything's going to be sweet. Even if it's the most mundane thing. I can't remember what other book I saw that in. I think one of the Heath Brothers books, maybe it's Making It Stick, where they talk about the importance of asking questions. I've talked about this before. I don't know if it was here or not, but people think the key to a good drasha is a good, you know, a good idea, a good conclusion. The key to a good drasha is a good question. If you can get the people who really want to know the answers, that's why, to me, I can tell what a good drasha and a bad drasha is based on whether I came up with a good question. Did I sell the question? If I sold the question, the answer, even if it's not the best answer, will be satisfying because people will feel a little curiosity, will feel hungry for it. But if you don't get the question out, I think the Heath brothers talk about something like that. They talk about, I don't know if it was Heath brothers. I'm trying to remember, I can't remember. Someone who studied the reason why Saturn has its rings. You know, that like this used to be like this bewildering question. How did Saturn get its rings? And they thought it was this, they thought it was that. And truth, it's just like ice particles or something. It's just ice. But they used to think it was all like meteors or other type of things. It was just ice. But that the author, I forgot which author it was, had that like this real, you know, thirst to understand. I think he might have been quoting a different science teacher that used that strategy. But either way, the point is developing questions. Developing that hunger is the most important part to feeling satiated. And I think today, because we are lacking so many deficiencies, we lack the lack, right? We're not missing much.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where you're not missing much, you don't feel satisfied when you get something. Just like anything, just like if you don't have something, the amount that you have to work for it. Just like lottery winners don't really, after the first initial thing, they don't have an appreciation for their money because they didn't work hard for it. So v'nefesh re'eva komar masok. If you are if you're really hungry, so then even the most bitter things will taste sweet. And in this case, we're going to say hunger is curiosity, according to Rashi. Dan Gilbert, yeah, okay. I thought you were right.
Same name,
right? Okay, Kitzipor no dedes min kina, kein ish no deid mim komo. Just like a bird wanders away from its nest, so too a man wanders from his place. Now, there are two ways to read this pasuk. It could either be what we would call descriptive or what we would call prescriptive. Descriptive means, are you just explaining the way things are, or are you telling us the way things should be? It's not clear from the pasuk. The only one word that might be an indicator is kain, as if this is what you should do, kain ish. But it also could be just a stam kain, like this is how it is. So the stam would be, the descriptive version would be, just like a bird that goes and it is, wanders away from the nest, so too a person wanders away from the nest. But, well, hold on. I think, therefore, he has to connect it to the next pasuk.
What about the man who doesn't
want something with a bird in the nest on a previous
Did we get a bird in the nest recently? I'm not sure. It's definitely possible. It does sound a little familiar. But I don't know if it was recent.
Something about the bird coming back versus not coming back.
Oh, that doesn't sound familiar.
I remember the details.
That doesn't sound familiar just right now, but we talked about it in Daf Yomi. Masechta Sukkah talks about dovecotes and how the birds come back. But I don't know. I don't remember. But here, so you could say that it's descriptive. What's descriptive? So the Mitzvah David explains, Kimoshe yikshe litzipor mashen anedes mikina, just like it's difficult for a bird to leave its nest, so too, yikshe liish hanidida mim komo, so too it's difficult for a man to leave his place. Right? To the extent that you're comfortable at home. So that's what we're talking about here. That the bird, you have to really know a lot about birds, but to the extent that the bird always wants to come back to its nest, but sometimes has to move away, so to the a person, you should know, and I guess, what's the point of this pasuk? I guess part of the point of the pasuk is that we think we will be emotionally stable no matter where we go. And the truth is that, and this is more homiletic because it doesn't say this in the pasuk, or it's an extension of the idea. It doesn't say in the pasuk. We don't really know how much we're supported by our familiar environments, mm-hmm. Right? We don't really know how much that benefits us. Have the same home, have the same bed, have the same routine, have the same friends, have the same supermarket, right? So much of that helps our own well-being, to the extent that if you go elsewhere, everything's a decision. It's almost like, decision overload. It's mental exhaustion, trying to figure all those things out. Obviously, that would be the case if you moved away to some other place, right? If you moved to a new place and you don't know the surroundings, you don't know the people, et cetera, that could be obviously very overwhelming. But I mean, even like, on vacation, you go on a vacation, trying to look for kosher food. Where are we going to get kosher food? Okay, so now you can find a Walmart, you'll get enough food somehow, some way. But there's a certain consternation of like, okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't know where I am. You don't feel, stable because you don't have your usual. It's hard to say because the pasuk not really saying this, but to the extent that we appreciate this pasuk, that we, just like birds, need our home nest, we should appreciate how much our home does for us and how much our surroundings do for us. And in modem of Shmoneh Esrei, instead of thanking Hashem for the latest business deal, you can thank Hashem for my home. Thank Hashem for my shul. Thank Hashem for my community. Thank Hashem for my car. And just the stuff that helps me every single day. Gratitude is the key to happiness, according to many studies. So maybe this is just one of those psukim. So that's one version. That's one option, that it's just descriptive. Just like it's hard for a bird to move away from the nest, so too it's hard for a person to move away from the nest. The nest, the home, brings you that sense of security.
Yeah.
Alternatively, it's non-descriptive. It's not just saying that that's how it is, but rather that's how it should be. Says the Ra'albag, L'siba chazaka b'shalotucha lichyos ba'aretz mimdei chozak hachom o'chozak hakor, kein ish noded mimkomo. Says the Ra'albag, just like a bird who has its nest to protect it, should not go too far and be a victim to the elements. So too, wrote Salomar, She'en ra'oi shi'ya no deid mimkomo im lo l'dimyon ha'siba azos. Unless it is absolutely necessary, you should really not move away. You should stay home. You should stay in the place that's most comfortable for you. Kemo shematzanu bi'avram uvi Yitzchak, she'his oru leha'a, I don't know what this word is, la'ataras mimkomo, leha'ata mimkomo, le'siba chazaka, the harav shahayasham, that Avram, at least Avram, had to leave Eretz Yisrael after Hashem said, lach lecha. Ki kaved harav ma'od. The famine was very overwhelming for Avram. It was very difficult for him. And that's why he had to leave. But if it wasn't for that, he shouldn't have left. And the Ramban even says, even with the difficult famine, Yaakov he should not have left. Yaakov also left.
And
yeah. Yeah, they all left in one way or another. If a person moves away from his house, he'll have to rebuild everything. I saw recently an interesting advice comment a person wrote about online, that if somebody's struggling, right, that the things aren't going well in life, and they just can't get out of the rut, and they don't have a good social network or whatever, then they should move away. Right? Instead of maintaining the negative, detrimental environment, go create a new environment. So sometimes, depending on the situation, it could be helpful. But assuming you have a stable life, never take for granted the home and the environment
that, with you.
Yeah,
that could be too. It depends what the problem is. Yeah, for sure. There is something to that. The Rambam says that if you're trying to do tshuva, you're trying to be a better person. So change your environment. Go somewhere else. And that could sort of restart you. And that's certainly true. You know, sometimes your home gives you that stability, but sometimes your home gives you that distraction, right? It basically gives you that stability in very narrow ways. Like, this is what you do at home, right? So, like, when I have to stay home, this week is vacation week, you know, for at least Moshe and for Ricky's barber teaching. So oftentimes vacation week is very, very challenging for me because it means I have to be home and work from home. And while the home provides that structure and that stability and whatever, it also gives me my home routine. And my home routine is not my work routine, you know? So I'll shmai around and I'll play with the kids and I'll, you know, eat food from the refrigerator that I don't need to eat. And if I was at work, I would not be eating anything, you know? And it distracts me from the stuff I have to do. So there are times that I can work at home. I'm not saying I can't work at home, but certainly in terms of like getting going and stuff like that, there's a certain detriment to it. So that's the two sides of the coin. It gives you that stability, but in a very narrow way. It gives you what the routine is that you're used to. Sometimes that's helpful because it gives you that security, and sometimes that's detrimental because you have to be doing something else besides your routine. I would hope so. He was very cute today. Yeah, he's currently obsessed with Toy Story, and his brothers and sisters were, so that helped. He has Woody and Buzz Lightyear jammies that he loves wearing, and every time we get dressed after the bath, he always asks for them. Now he's learned that sometimes they're in the laundry, but before it was kind of difficult. Like, no, we can't wear those; they're not available. But yes, so now that he's home and he doesn't have to get dressed for school, he wore his Woody pajamas all day today. And he was a very happy camper. Anyways.
I resorted to cutting my cousin's blanket in half because he wouldn't give it off.
Ooh.
So she cut it in half so she could wash it off of
him. Oh, really? That's an interesting strategy. Can't do that with pajamas. Yeah, that's true. Pasuk Tes, Chav Zayin Tes, 27:9. Shemen uketoris yisamach lev, umesek re'ehu me'atzas nafesh. I truly don't understand what this word mesek means, but I can tell you how Artscroll is translating it. The pasuk means, according to Artscroll, oil and incense gladden the heart. These are nice smelling things, nice tasting things. Umesek re'ehu me'atzas nafesh. That part I understand. Umesek re'ehu atzas nafesh, they're explaining as so does the sweetness of one's friend from his sincere counsel. Mesek, they're talking about as sweet, but mesek re'eyu, the sweetness of your friend, me'atzas nafesh, is an interesting way of saying that. Meaning, if the advice is sweet, it should be mesek eitza, the sweetness of the advice. Here it's saying mesek re'eyu me'atzas nafesh. Mesek re'eyu atzas nafesh makes it sound like you are benefiting not from the actual advice, but from the friend. And from that, I want to actually read a beautiful message here from
Rav Hirsch. Friend, Rabbi.
Good.
Just the advice. He's a sweet friend.
Good. Hold that thought. I want to go a step further than that. Rav Hirsch says, at least according to the Art Scroll footnote here, the enjoyment afforded by communicating with a sincere friend is comparable to physical pleasure one enjoys from oil and perfume, and one gains much more than if he has only himself to consult. Working on what Henry was saying, it's not just that the person is your friend. It's that the person is discussing how to help you. It doesn't matter what he's saying. It doesn't matter what he or she, when they call you up on the phone and says, hey, I realize you need help with something. Maybe you can do this. Maybe you can do that. And let's say you say no or no. That a lot of times, you know, that's my job is to tell people things that they know they already know. That they just people want to vent to me, and that's fine. I'm here for it. You know, people want you, Rabbi. I'm having such difficulty. I know. I'm sorry. Did you try this? Did you try that? And I know they've tried this. And they've tried that. But that's not. They don't care for my answers. They care for my friendship. They care for my listening. They want to know that I hear them and that, you know, that they're being recognized. So to hear, I think Rav Hirsch is saying, the mesek re'eyu, speaking like as Henry was saying, mesek re'eyu is the sweetness of the friendship, but specifically a friendship that's me'atzas nafesh. It's a friendship that's willing to give you advice. Not that the advice is good or bad, but they care enough about you that they want to tell you something. They want to try to help you. And just that notion of being helped goes a long way. Just the notion of somebody offering their assistance, even if that assistance doesn't matter. It's a certain level, a certain sweetness of a friendship that they can help you or that they want to help you. You feel like deserving. You feel worthy. You feel validated that I'm worthy of a person's assistance. And I think that's what Rav Hirsch is trying to say. And it, just like the oil and the incense is joyful, is pleasurable, so too a person really feels, you know, as they say today in today's vernacular, they feel seen. Have you ever heard that phrase? I feel seen. You know, it's like a newer type of phrase, but it's a real thing. I talked about this during COVID a little bit.
Validated,
but recognized. Like my existence is important, right? Not just that what I'm doing or what I'm going through is validated, but that I am a person that's deserving of attention. And especially in the world that we live in, and with technology and communication through screens, you don't get that message from people. You know, even if it's a text that says, you know, I'm going shopping, do you want anything? Like that helps a little bit, but it's not the same thing as a person right in front of you and saying, I noticed that you're hungry, can I get you something? You know, there's a different feeling, there's a different sweetness of that relationship. And Pasuk says, a beautiful drasha, one of the should be the more well-known drashas of the Chiddush Shearim. He has many beautiful drashas, obviously, but one of the beautiful, one of the really beautiful ones is what he says by Makas Choshech, which made the rounds during COVID. What did the Pasuk say? V'lo ra'u ishe v'yamesh Choshech, v'lo ra'u ishe sachiv, v'lo yakum ish mimkomo, something like that. That people couldn't see each other, and people didn't go anywhere. And the Chiddush Shearim says that those two things are not just descriptions of Choshech. They're actually one and the same thing. That it's because people couldn't see each other, that's why they didn't go anywhere. That in order to feel like we should go out in the world and do stuff, we should feel proactive about, you know, accomplishing, achieving, you know, trying, we have to feel seen. We have to feel that our contribution is important. If we don't feel like our contribution is important, so why am I going to get out of bed today? Mm-hmm. And so I think so many, you know, people in at least in secular culture, but even in Jewish community, they have, you know, a job where nobody sees them. Maybe they're working online or something, and they have maybe they have parents that are enabling them, and they just sit at home and they do whatever they want to do. And after a while, it's like, well, why do I get up in the morning? Why do I even go out of the house? They say that during the last decade, the rates of what's the word, agoraphobia, the fear of leaving the house. The fear of leaving the house has skyrocketed, and there, I think there was a, in China, they made like a new position, like the position of loneliness or something.
Loneliness, yeah.
Yeah. You just saw that? I guess like a few years old.
It may have been on before, but
yeah.
I just watched
but it's a real issue, and it's a real issue that I think there are other aspects to it, you know, in terms of what technology does. But at the very least, technology, you know, keeps you in your house, doesn't let you get out, and doesn't allow others to see you, right? And something that I try to focus on is very hard because you're trying to see things that aren't there. You know, if somebody's not in shul, you know, at least for 1 week, maybe, but at least for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So then you reach out to them and say, hey, I noticed you weren't in shul, you know, just to make sure that they feel seen, even if they're not here. Mm-hmm. They're seen in the sense that they weren't here. Yeah, that's also the same thing. But yeah. I think that's what Shlomo Melech is saying here. Umesek re'ehu, as Henry was saying before, it's the sweetness of the friendship, but it's me'atzas nafesh. It's the sweetness of a friendship that comes from a person who's reaching out to help you. There's a certain sweetness there that you can't ignore. Okay, one more pasuk here. Pasuk Yud, Chav Zayin Yud 27:10. Re'acha v're'a avicha al tazov, ubeis achicha al tavo biyomedecha, tov shachein karov me'ach rachok. There's a lot here, and it's somewhat cryptic, and there are different explanations, different mefarshim, different commentaries take different ways of splitting up the pasuk. But it means your friends and your father's friends do not forsake. What does that mean, your friend, your father's friend? I believe Rashi says that this is referring to Hashem, right? That, and this is actually, Rashi says this on that famous Gemara about V'hafta L'recha Kamocha, that Beis Hillel converted, or Hillel converted that convert on one leg. He says, V'hafta L'recha Kamocha, everything else is just commentary.
Yeah.
Rashi on that Gemara says, Re'acha is referring to Hashem. Not to everybody else, right? Re'acha, do to Hashem what you would want done to yourself, right? Treat Hashem like he's a spouse. Do what he wants. And then everything else is commentary. How to do that is commentary. So Rashi similarly says here, what does it mean, your friend and your father's friend? They're the same person, the same being, they're the same Hashem. Your parents' Hashem is the same as your Hashem. So do not forsake him. Okay, that's Rashi in a very symbolic way. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, what it means is someone who's a really good friend. You know what a really good friend is? A really good friend is someone who's been with you for a long time. Mm-hmm. They were friends with your father, and they're friends with you, and they're still with you. Mm-hmm. So that kind of friendship, that's a strong friendship. You don't want to forsake that kind of friendship. Mm-hmm. That's by the Mesudas David, he says that's how important that is. Shenishrisha ha'ava. Ulze al ta'azov ahava so v'yatiftach lomar hine bevo ala yom eid avo el beis achi lish'ol me'imo ezra. And when it comes to ubeis achicha al tavo biyom eidecha, if you've got a good friend, mm-hmm. that somebody you want to you want to confide in, or somebody, you know, that can help you in a difficult time, biyom eidecha is your time of need. Yeah. Don't go to your brother's house. If you got a friend like that, don't go to your brother's house. Now, family, the right? What's it say? Blood is thicker than
water.
Blood is thicker than water, or something like that. But the point here is, I think, if you've made a friendship that is that strong, so then it's stronger than a family friendship. Not because family isn't important, but because there's a certain taken for granted aspect to family. They're not going to do as much for you as a really good friend would be, because there's so much invested in having a really good friendship. The family member is wonderful, and hopefully they will be there for you in a time of need. But they don't have to be there for you as much. I talked about this 2 years ago in Sukkos. I spoke about how the sukkah is a mitzvah sheleis bechi saron kis. Not going to get into it. Long story short, when you have a family member, so for instance, I think maybe I gave it the example back then also. You know, if you've got, you know, you hear, you see a lot of this stuff now online with Thanksgiving or because of today's holiday, people, you know, getting together with family. And yet you find that when family gets together, they're always like, you know, insulting each other, not getting along. And yet when a friend comes over, everyone's on their best behavior. So what's the difference? The difference is family's not going anywhere, right? Family is always going to be your family. Now, obviously, there are some times where family is not your, you know, not that close either. But the point is there's a certain assumption that I don't have to work hard for this relationship because we're family. A brother is going to be a brother is going to be a brother. We're always going to be brothers. There's nothing you can do to take away that the brotherhood there. And therefore, I don't really have to invest. But if you have a friend who you have invested in and they've invested in you, and that's a strong bond, you know that that person is willing to invest in you. So when it comes to ubeis achicha al tavo biyomidacha, if you need something in your time of need, if you've got a good friend, go to your friend. Because you know that friend will invest. You know that friend is willing to sacrifice. As opposed to your brother, maybe your brother's going to push you off. He's going to do something, whatever they can do. But they're not going to go full all in because they're going to be your brother either way. And similarly, tov shachin karov me'ach rachok. Better is a close neighbor than a far brother. I think this is also a little, this is a new wrinkle. This wrinkle means better is the person who lives next to you than the than a brother who lives far away. Because what's the brother who lives far away going to do?
Nothing.
He's going to help, maybe not so much, because he doesn't have to live with you tomorrow. He's going to leave. You know, family comes over for one day, and you know, they make a mess in your kitchen. They don't care. They're leaving. You know, they're going back home, whoever that is. But your next door neighbor, you know, if you don't properly, you know, shovel the snow, and therefore they can't walk down the sidewalk, you're going to hear about it from them, mm-hmm. right? And you can count on them. They can count on you because you've got it. You're in this together.
Yeah.
You're right. It's like an HOA. You've got to do it together. And that's why I think there's a certain accountability when it comes to a neighbor that you don't have by a family. Now, it obviously doesn't mean, like, for all things, you know, neighbors are better than family, right? The fences make great neighbors, as they say. But the point is that for certain liability things or certain accountability things, so your neighbor can be counted on more than family who lives far away. There's not a lot of accountability. There's not a lot of leverage that you have over a family member who lives far away. Okay, we'll leave it there.
Right.
We will pick up Mirat Hashem next week, 27:11. Chav Zayin Yud Aleph. Thank you again to the Tagers for sponsoring tonight's Shir and Base Medrash classes. I don't know if the other ones actually happened, but thank you to the Tagers for sponsoring Le'ilu Nishma Shmuel Dov Ben Yehuda Zev Halevi. His name is Shavu and Aliyah.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks, Henry. Thanks,
I have
Evan.
A question,
thank
you, Wask.
Yeah, Joseph, go ahead.
So the last thing you said was better is a close neighbor than a far brother.
Right.
What about a near brother too? You know, the comparison isn't put in there.
Right. I think the most previous clause talks about a brother without any geographic distinction. So I think I would say that it depends. If you have a close friend, a re'acha, v're'ah avicha, so then that would be better than even a close family member. The end of the pasuk is talking about a shachin. A shachin is not necessarily a close friend. They're just geographically close.
I see.
So I think that's why you have both examples.
I find it interesting that you know, it's what is like more beneficial. I don't remember the word exactly used just now to translate it, but it's not like which is better. Like, hey, you know, in the scheme of the universe, what does God think is better?
Right, right.
You know, but rather, what is better for us, or what affects us better, or something like that.
Right.
I
think
I
think it was more utilitarian, right? What are the functional, practical aspects of it? I think that's true. Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Eugene. And Sharon, I hope you get things worked out as quickly as possible, as safely as possible.
Thank you.
Okay. Be well, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you.